The story was real. I became one of the characters. The characters surrounded me. They became my invisible friends. I began to dress like them. In fact, with Superman, I used to wear tights and then my underwear outside my tights, just like real men do. I would wear my socks up high over my tights, my Superman shirt tucked into the undies, and my cape flowing in the wind. And I would wear that around. And then when it was time for school, I would put on my school clothes over my Superman clothes and head to school. Yeah, I did that. I did it for a long time, like way longer than I should have. Okay? Way longer than I should have. In fact, every day it was a similar routine. I would go upstairs, because I lived downstairs, and I would try to head out to school, and my mom would say, "Brady, seriously, this is embarrassing. Your cape is hanging out. Go take off your Superman clothes and come back upstairs." So I'd stomp downstairs. I'd look in the mirror. Sure enough, my cape's hanging out. So then I'd try to stuff it back in. And then I'd go up. "I'm ready." Say, "Brady, your cape is bulging. Like, your rear end is not that big. Come on. Take them off." You're in high school, okay? This is crazy. So I'd go downstairs, take off the cape, put it in my backpack, and then go upstairs. And she never knew. Because I had to be ready to fight crime on the streets whenever. The bad guys didn't wait till 3:15 when school was out, okay? They didn't wait, and so I needed to be ready. And this was kind of the way that my life became. And so everything around me changed. See, trees became forts. Sticks became swords. Rocks became hand grenades. Right? My mom had an old refrigerator box, and that became a phone booth where I would change into my Superman clothes or just take off my outer clothes because it was already on. Right? Right? Like this is the way that it was. I remember my mom's hairnet became a Spider-Man mask for me. My dad's employees became villains and victims and comrade in arms, right? Like, that was the way my world existed. There were two guys that worked for my dad, and I remember I would go every day to their office, and I'd have a rope in my hand, and I'd be at the door just grinning, and they'd say, "Do you want us to tie you up?" And I'd say, and then they'd tie me up and throw me in the closet, and I would get out of it every time. That was my reality. Everything was different. For me, I believed it so deeply that when my uncle told me that if I ate Peter Pan peanut butter, I could fly, that I went on top of a two-story building with my cape flapping in the wind, my Peter Pan peanut butter, getting ready to leap off to certain doom. And some lady came by and she saved me. But I, like, that was my reality. Like, everything was changed. The world that everyone else saw was not the world that I saw. It was not the world that I experienced. I saw it differently, and they thought I was crazy, you might think, right? They thought I was strange. They thought I was odd. People don't get that into things that aren't real, but I did. I loved it. And in fact, now I look back at it, and part of me pities them because my reality was so much better than the one that they were living in. I got tied up all the time, and I got out of the chains, and I would think I could fly, and I dreamed about it, and all these kind of things. It was so fun, because I believe that we all are bystanders of a bigger story, and we are longing to get into it, and that is why so often reality is not enough for us. That's why so often we get so deeply into these movies, in these books, in these stories, because they're so compelling, more compelling than the life that we know. And we think, we realize there's something more, but we can't quite put our finger on what it is. Why don't you grab your Bibles? We're going to be in John, the book of John, chapter 21, last chapter in the book of John. So if you hit Acts, you've gone just a little bit too far. Turn right, left. I don't know my left from my right, by the way. I struggle with that. My driver instructor in my test told me to go right, and I went left. And about 100 yards later, I said, "Did I go the wrong way?" And he said yes, as he was marking it off. I failed my first driver's test. It wasn't great. John chapter 21. It says, "After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and he revealed himself in this way." Well, obviously, we need a little context because it starts out with the word "after this." So we need to know after what? And we see that Jesus revealed himself again. So we obviously had revealed himself before. What's going on? Jesus, we know about Jesus, right? It's what Christmas and Easter is about, right? Jesus was born of a virgin, right? He lived for, let's see, December 21st, January 25th, January, February, March, April. He lived for 4 months, and then he died on a cross. Did anyone think that growing up? I thought that. I could not understand how he was only 4 months old, and yet he was an old man. No, he lived a bunch of years before that, okay? And in, around 30, he started his mission. He started his ministry, and he began to accumulate disciples. People started following him all over. And then he chose for himself 12 specific guys to be his apostles. He chose them, and he hung out with them for about 3 years. They hung out all the time. They traveled all over the place. Jesus did awesome miracles, all kind of crazy stuff. And then he went down to Jerusalem with them. They shared the Passover together, which was the Last Supper. He was betrayed by one of them, Judas, and then he was tortured to death on a cross. They scattered. They were terrified. Only one stuck by his side. It was John. And then on the third day, he rose from the grave. Jesus, who had died, who was dead, who had a spear pierced in his side and blood and water came out separately, which is a sure sign of death. He was dead, laid in a tomb, wrapped in like 100 pounds of cloth and spices and stuff. And on the third day, he rose from the grave and he appeared to the disciples. He appeared to these women who were faithful followers of him first. Then he appeared to some of the guys. And this, it says, is the third time. I think it says that. Does it after this? No, it just says again. So there were times before this. There were at least one time before this, right? And now he's appearing again. So this is what's happened. Right? You, one of your closest buddies, your mentor, your friend, this guy that you respect, you love, you've learned from, you've traveled with, you've lived with for 3 years, he gets killed, gets tortured to death, you're terrified, you run, and then he raises from the grave, and your mind is absolutely blown, okay? Anyone else ever seen someone raised from the grave? I can't imagine what that must have been like. But it was crazy. And so they already knew he had risen from the grave. And this is what happens. It says Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, because apparently he looked like someone else, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other of his disciples who weren't important enough to name, were together. Okay? I don't know why John doesn't name them here, but he doesn't name them here. And that's okay. There are a number of things that John writes that I'm going to want to know about when I get to heaven. Why he records the race between him and Peter on Sunday when they're going to the tomb and John makes sure he lets everyone know that he ran faster than Peter. I don't know why, but I bet it's epic, okay? So anyway, we've got a bunch of disciples and they're hanging out together and Peter says to them, I'm going fishing. And they said to him, we'll go with you. And they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. This should shock you. In fact, right now, all of us should be going, what? Wait, Peter said what? He's going to go fishing? First of all, okay, this is not like fishing today. How many people like fishing? Guys, girls, you like to fish? You know, it's relaxing. You know, you just kind of kick back, you get a pole, get a rod and reel, get some bait, go to the creek and you know, cast. Okay, not relaxing for me. I hate it. It's slimy and icky and other things that me and the Menly Man don't like to do. Okay, I don't like to fish. But that's not what fishing was in that day and age. In that day and age, it wasn't a leisurely activity. Fishing was a job. Fishing was a big-time job. Okay, you take a boat, a big old boat, out on the sea or lake, a giant lake, and you would go out either by rowing if the wind wasn't with you, or you'd get this giant sail and go out, and then you would cast these gigantic nets that would pull in loads of fish. And you would put them in your boat, and you'd go back. And you had so many fish, you obviously couldn't eat them. And there were no refrigerators. There weren't preservatives, right? They didn't suffer from all the things that we suffer from now, these new diseases that have popped up because we put preservatives in everything. So you couldn't eat these all the fish. So what would you do with the ones that you caught? Yes, you would sell them. This was a job that you did. Now, the reason this is so shocking is that Peter said, I'm going to go fishing. Right? Of all people. Why is this such a big deal? Turn to Matthew. Turn to Matthew chapter 4. We're starting verse 18. Chapter 4, verse 18, it says, while walking by the Sea of Galilee, he, Jesus, saw two brothers, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. So what we know about Peter is that Peter and Andrew, his brother, their trade was that they were fishermen. The reason their trade was fishermen was because that was their dad's trade. Their dad was a fisherman, and they had interned with their dad, or they had been an apprentice to their dad, and he had taught them the family trade, and now they were carrying out the family trade, caring for their families and their parents through fishing. That was what they did. And the reason that was what they did was because at some point they had been rejected from Torah school. No rabbi wanted them to be their disciple, and they went home to the family business to catch fish. And so here they are, doing their family trade, catching fish. And it says, Jesus said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Immediately they left their nets, and they followed him. Okay, so now they're doing their family trade. They're doing what they had always known. They're doing what their dad had always known. They were doing the thing that they had nothing else that they could be doing. This was their job. This was their livelihood. And then Jesus comes along. Now more of the story is told in I think it's Luke, where they caught no fish the night before. Jesus says, hey, let's hang out and we'll cast the nets on the other side. And they pulled in so many fish that the nets were breaking. Jesus pulls in, all these fish, and Peter is so overwhelmed, he gets down on his knees. He's like, my Lord, my God, unbelievable. I can't imagine. Get away from me. I am a sinful man. He's so shocked by what happens. And so Jesus says, hey, why don't you guys follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. Not fishers of fish, fishers of men. He radically changed Peter's occupation, his purpose, right? And so now Peter, his purpose, his occupation is to fish for men, and he follows Jesus. And Andrew follows Jesus, and all the other disciples, they follow Jesus. And as Jesus is going around, he's saying crazy things like, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. The kingdom of heaven. This thing that all the Jewish people had been longing for, had been yearning for, that they knew the Messiah was gonna initiate. The kingdom of heaven is now currently at hand. That the reality that you know has altered. It's no longer that Rome is in charge. It's no longer that you're going to be oppressed. Everything is going to change. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. And Peter was following him. And he was watching him do all kind of miracles along with the rest of the disciples. At one point, they go up to Caesarea Philippi. And Jesus says, hey, who does everyone say that I am? And they're like, oh, some of the prophets, maybe John the Baptist come back to life. And Jesus says, who do you say that I am? And Peter stepped up. He said, you are the Son of God. You're the chosen one. And Jesus says, this has not been revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by the Father. That God had revealed this amazing thing to Peter, that Peter proclaimed Jesus as the Son of God, that he was the one who would come, that would institute the kingdom of heaven, and everything would radically change. Peter claimed this. He knew this. He saw it. And Jesus says this amazing phrase. They're at this place on the cusp of this gigantic rock formation that has a cave in it where water's coming out that everyone believed was the gates of hell. They believed this was the gates of Hades, that this is where, all kind of evil would come out of. And Jesus at this point says, you are Peter, and on this rock I'm going to build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. So now, Jesus has come, he has given them a new identity, a new profession, he has shown them a brand new reality, right? And then he said, what's going to happen is you are going to take charge, you, my disciples, are going to charge the gates of hell. And it's not going to prevail against you. The kingdom of heaven is at hand, and it's going to spread out, and nothing will be able to stop it. He says, I'm giving you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. What you bind on earth will be bound on earth. What you bind in heaven will be bound in heaven. It's amazing what Jesus did. And then, on top of all that, what had Jesus just done? When he were in this boat. He just walked on the water a couple years earlier. He just raised from the grave, right? They were in the boat, and Jesus was appearing to them again. He had already appeared to them, so they knew he had raised from the grave. They touched his the scars in his hands and his side. They saw him eat fish. Like, I mean, it was they knew that he had raised from the grave, that he has defeated death, that there was this guy who they believed was the Messiah, who was instituting the kingdom of heaven, that death couldn't touch him. The grave couldn't hold him. They had a completely new altered reality that Jesus had given them. He had given them a brand new identity, clothed them in a new identity. He had restored their purpose, right? Our God-given, God-created purpose was to image God to the world. And yet in our tarnished, sinful state, we didn't do that real well. And Jesus had restored their purpose. And not just given them a purpose, but he had demonstrated and also initiated in them or renewed in them a passion. The passion of Christ that they saw demonstrated in Jesus going to the cross, doing whatever it took for people to come to know him, to be a part of the kingdom of heaven, to be invited into the family of God. Everything had changed for the disciples. And yet, we see them going back to their old ways. Peter wasn't a fisher of fish anymore. What was he doing fishing for fish? He was a fisher of men. That wasn't his reality any longer. That wasn't his purpose any longer. That wasn't the passion that God was giving him in his heart. What was he doing? What were they doing still fishing? Jesus had called him out of that. And it wasn't until Jesus sent the Spirit to indwell the church that everything changed. I don't know if you have been with us for a while, but we were in the book of Acts. And in the book of Acts, in the early church, things went crazy. Everything that Jesus had talked about, the new reality that he had shown them, began to take place. They said, Jesus is obviously Lord. He is obviously King of Kings. He is seated at the right hand of God. The kingdom of heaven is at hand, and it's coming through us, and the gates of hell will not prevail. Nothing can stop it. So life is going to look differently, right? Money is no longer something to be accumulated. Money is something to be given so that there are no poor, because in the kingdom of heaven, there's not going to be poor people. So we're going to sell our possessions. We're going to sell our land. We're going to sell our homes to provide for those that are in need. Right? Glory is not something to be gotten for ourselves. It's something to be redirected to God, because all the glory is God's now. Widows, there shouldn't be widows that aren't taken care of, so they took care of the widows. They put people in place that could take care of the widows, those women who had lost their husbands who could no longer provide for themselves. They were to be taken care of. The poor were to be taken care of. The orphans were to be invited in. The prisoners were to be visited. The gospel was to be proclaimed from Jerusalem to Judea to Samaria to the remotest parts of the earth. And that is the way that they lived, because they had an altered reality that Jesus had shown them. They saw the world in a completely new light. Everything was different to their eyes. He clothed them in a brand new identity. He'd restored their purpose. He had instilled in them, renewed in them a passion that had laid dormant because of the crazy effects of sin on this world. And they began to live radically differently. This is what God has done. This is what God has done for all of us. He's altered our reality. The world is not as it seems, folks. It's not the way that it seems. All the things that the world tells you, get fame, success, money, wealth, popularity, use your gifts and talents to bring glory to yourself, to get fame and success. And Jesus said, no, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. I am Lord. I am ruling and reigning. Death cannot hold me. He's altered our reality. He's given us a brand new identity. He says, behold, the old is gone. The new has come. If anyone's in Christ, he's a brand new creation. He's restored our purpose to image God to the world, to display God to the world. He is not only, he's taken us from being spectators of this grand story and invited us into the story and made us characters in this story. But even more than that, beyond that, he has made us carriers of this epic story. And he's given us a passion to do it. His passion for the lost, to carry the story to those that are spectators, that are longing for to jump into the story and they don't even know it. To proclaim to them that God desires you to be in his family, that you can have forgiveness, you can have life abundantly, you can have freedom from the things that are enslaving you. This is our new reality. This is our new identity. This is our new purpose. This is our new passion that Jesus has given us. And yet so many of us are going back to our old nets. We're going back to our old jobs. We're going back to our old ways. You're a child of the King, and yet you're seeking to get your fulfillment in people. You're free, and yet you're living in bondage to slavery and sin. You have this new purpose, and yet you're clinging to your dreams and your hopes and your plan. And Jesus says, no, man, that's not your reality anymore. I changed everything, and I want you to be a part of this. I want you to be a character in this story, and I want you to be a carrier of this story. This week is Global Mission Week for us. What do we call this? Global Mission, anyone know? I've forgotten. Mission Serve Global, thank you. This weekend is Mission Serve Global. We have Mission Serve Local and Mission Serve Global. We do this once a year global, once a year local. And this is Mission Serve Global this weekend, where we as a community begin to look out beyond ourselves, beyond our lives, our homes, our community, our city, and look at God's greater story, greater plan for the world, and say that we are characters in this. We are called to participate in it. In fact, we have a passion, whether we know it or not, to participate in it, to carry this story to others and invite them into this amazing, life-altering reality.